나오 부낙투 사하빌얀 가라바바하이 대자스리나바디다마스터마베드베샤바하이 Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, continuing on page 3. Later, during the Dol Yatra, Dol Purnima festival, Sri Krishna and Baladev enjoyed pastimes in the forest with the young women of Braja. The girlfriends of Baladev and those of Krishna joined together and sang about their transcendental qualities. When the two lords became absorbed in singing to the point of apparent intoxication, a servant of Kuvera's named Shankachuda boldly came forward and began abducting the gopis. The young girls called out, Krishna, please save us. And he and Rama began to chase after Shankachuda. Don't be afraid, Krishna called out to the gopis. In fear of the Lord, Shankachuda left the gopis aside and ran for his life. Krishna chased after him, swiftly approached him, and with a blow of his fist removed Shankachuda's jewel together with his head. Then Krishna brought the jewel back and presented it to Lord Baladev. Shloka Nisharanam, summary of verses. Verses 1 to 4, the Shivaratri festival and Ambikavan. 5 to 19, Nandamar saved from the serpent. 20 to 32, the pastime of Shankachuda. Verses 1 to 4, the Shivaratri festival in Ambikavan. Sukadev Goswami said, One day the cowherd men, eager to take a trip to worship Lord Shiva, traveled by bullock cart to the Ambika forest. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates, To show a similar pastime related to the same subject as the Rasa dance, and which ends with the killing of Shankachuda. Sukadev now relates another pastime that shows Krishna's power used to prevent opposing persons from interfering with such pastimes at the end of the chapter, I guess. More of a Middle Eastern spelling or something. Chapter. Okay. This current pastime of going to Ambikavan chronologically comes between the Rasa dance and the Horika pastime, holy. Right, so he's going to show the two dancing in that, and this pastime comes in between. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, There's an important ceremony called Shivaratri, which is especially observed by the Shaivites, or devotees of Lord Shiva. Sometimes the Vaishnavas also observe this ceremony, because they accept Lord Shiva as the foremost Vaishnava. But the function of Shivaratri is not observed very regularly by the bhaktas or devotees of Krishna. Right? So, because we accept him in this position doesn't mean that then that's a regular worship. Does that make sense? So it's sometimes then there may be this worship, but it's not that it has to be established as a regular thing and all that. That we're not inclined towards. Under the circumstances, Srimad Bhagavatam states that Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men once upon a time desired. Right? So it wasn't every year they were going. This means that they were not regularly observing the Shivaratri function, but that once upon a time they wanted to go to Ambikavan out of curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
This, it says that once upon a time the desire to go and observe the Shivaratri festival.
Yes.
So, is it you go once and then you don't go upon
It's not a regular thing, so you don't even need to go. It's not that, you know, like Hajj, you got to go once in a lifetime or something, you know. Yeah, does that make sense? You know. Yeah, so. Unless you're, you know, Haji Bekar, it's not important. Right? That makes sense? To a few, it makes sense. But. Okay.
Yes. Where is this place geographically?
Where is this place geographically? That will come up. But it's on the bank of the Saraswati. When the Saraswati was visible. Sukadeva Goswami continued, O king, after arriving there, they bathed in the Saraswati and then devotedly worshipped the various paraphernalia, the powerful Lord Pashupati and his consort, Goddess Ambika. The coward men gave the brahmanas gifts of cows, gold, clothing, and cooked grains mixed with honey. Then the cowherds prayed, May the Lord be pleased with us. Nanda, Sunanda, and the other greatly fortunate cowherds spent that night on the bank of the Saraswati. Strictly observing their vows, they fasted, taking only water, right? Because it was a codicy. So, you know, point being is taking the water doesn't break a fast. You're fasting, then drinking water doesn't do that. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, after reaching Ambikavan, the coward men of Vrindavan first bathe themselves on the river Saraswati. One goes to any place of pilgrimage, his first duty is to take a bath and sometimes to shave his head. That is the first business. After taking a bath, they worshipped the deities and then distributed charity in the holy places. According to the Vedic system, charity is given to the brahmanas. It is stated in the Vedic shastras that only the brahmanas and the sannyasis can accept charity. The coward men from Vrindavan gave the brahmins cows decorated with golden ornaments and beautiful garlands. The Brahmins are given charity because they are not engaged in any business profession. Right? Because the activities of what we would call the occupation of a Brahmin is just the ashram activities of a Brahmin. Right? But for them, that is their occupation. So technically, they have no occupation. Therefore, then in the same line, then in the ashram things, then things are given in charity. Right? Because if you're talking about occupation, that you generally don't want to give something in charity. That's an ashram thing, not a varna thing. Right? Does that make sense? So, in there, then their occupation is receiving charity that's given by others in this consideration of ashram. So it leads the whole varna system, but technically it's the ashram activities. They're supposed to be engaged in brahminical occupations as described in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Namely, they must be very learned and must perform austerity and penances. Not only must they themselves be learned, but they must teach others, right? So not that you just know, you also teach. Brahmins are not meant to be Brahmins alone. They should create other Brahmins also. The man is found who agrees to become a Brahmin's disciple is given the chance to become a Brahmana. The Brahmana is always engaged in the worship of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, the Brahmins are eligible to accept all kinds of charity. But if the Brahmanas receive excess charity, they are to distribute it for the service of Vishnu. In the Vedic scriptures, therefore, one is recommended to give charity to the Brahmanas, and by so doing, one pleases Lord Vishnu and all the demigods. Right? So, by giving to the Brahmanas, then if they will be using it in their activities or service to Krishna. Then if they get excess, they'll distribute that. That'll be used in the service of Lord Vishnu. So either to programs dealing with the deities, to the devotees, like this. They'll distribute it. So that's why money given to the Brahmins, one doesn't have to worry about. Right, those who are engaged in business professions, they worry about it because they think, why are they getting all the money when I'm making money? I should have all the money. And why they should be control of the money? I should be control of the money because I know what money is for. Right? But in actuality, the Vedic system seems to have a different approach. Yes.
Since we're discussing the qualities of a Brahmin, I'm just wondering, in our ISKCON family on Gaudiya Vaishnavism, when Brahminical initiation is given, what was Prabhupada's vision, or what is the exact, it's never clear to me.
No, it's clear. It says when one's stable, then one gets second initiation. So it's technically supposed to represent the position of being in Nishtha. That's what it's for. Right? The first is when you're committed to following the devotional process. You know, that commitment is there. You know, so that's first initiation. But second is this one, you're steady. So, yes. So that's the whole idea, is that it has to be the Brahmins engaged in the service of the Lord, and then everything connected to him is engaged in the service of the Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, they drank only water because they had taken a vow, yata vrataha. Since it was Shivaratri, Sunanda, the younger brother of Nanda, is mentioned since he was one of the leading figures. This means that the older brother, Upananda, remained in Braja to protect it, since he was older in knowledge and years. Right, so they, Nanda Maharaj went, but that means someone has to stay to watch all these things. Right. So then Upananda stayed, and we see Sunanda is there with them. Verses 5 to 19.
Mm-hmm. When it mentions that Brahmanas, they should give excess charity, you know?
No,
I mean,
they
what
should,
is excess?
It means excess to them.
Yeah, excess to them should be given.
Doesn't mean that they should give excessive charity.
No. But then,
or excessively Brahman, given charity.
But then every Brahman, you know, he defines what is excess to him. I mean, it differs, you know, from one Brahman.
It differs from one Brahman to the next, yes.
But actually, in case of Brahman, it should not differ.
Sorry?
In case of Brahman, you know, who are saying that their ashram is only the Varna, for them, it should be standard in the sense.
It should be standard.
Yeah.
Why should it be standard?
What is it that say?
Then yes, then it would also be easier. Is just, see, it's like this. Now you go out, you go to a shop, right? A retail shop. And retail is always more than wholesale, right? So that means then, by going there, you're spending more money, right? So now if we really wanted to have it down, we would go to the guys that make the saris. And we would say, okay, give us 10,000 of this sari, or maybe get a few variety, a few different, you know, three or four colors like that. You know, ones that kind of match anything, right? And then just have them make 10,000 of that. And then we have it, and then everybody gets their three, four saris, and if you're, you know, busy or use more, then you get double of those, you know, so you have two of them in case one wears out. And then it would be so much easier, right? Because everything's the same. It's just, yeah, good. So that's the thing. I mean, we've already done it for the men. They all just wear white. And that.
Got it?
Okay.
When we talk about brown as men.
Yes, and so they all wear white. Yeah, so it's already worked out. So the point is now if that brahmana is, let's say, a brahmacharya or sannyasi, you know, then you give it to the brahmachari, and then he's going to give it to his spiritual master, right? So that's not a problem. But now the grihastha, since we're bringing that point out, what makes him a grihastha? Yes, okay. And then are the ladies going to buy this one?
No.
No, okay. Then therefore, everybody's going to be different. Right? Because somebody, then their wife is happy to sit under a tree, you know, like Lord Shiva. And some of them, they like a little bit more than under a tree. Like, Yes.
I have a doubt with respect to charity.
You have a doubt respect to charity.
Is charity only for Brahmanas? Because, for example, if somebody is a deceased class of society, say leprosy or any disease, are they aware in Vedic times and how they were taken care? And do the
But that's welfare, that's not charity.
So does that come within devotional fold or is just a social service?
Does that come into?
Within some kind of system within a Vedic society,
yes.
They are being taken care.
Well, why wouldn't they be taken care?
If they are in need, for example, they cannot maintain themselves, they are very poor or they are very...
You keep giving examples, but you're not explaining the example.
I'm with this current context, like when I travel to trains, we see a lot of poor people or diseased people. We feel some kind of compassion to give them, help them some way out. So during Vedic time, was there some class of people like that or everybody was taken care and or what's the responsibility of the devotees if we see that?
Means you're always going to have that class of people.
Huh.
It's just whether people take care of them or not.
Huh.
So that's what welfare is for, is to take care of those people. Huh. Brahmins get charity, these people it's welfare.
And that's the duty of Kshatriya. Who will do that welfare to you?
Anybody who's in a position to do that welfare. Right? It's not that the Vaishya has to pay his tax, and so, okay, now that's the charity. And so now the Kshatriya, he's the one that has to do the tax and take care of everybody. And the rest of the money is just for the Vaishya. No, he's paying tax, he's giving charity, he's doing welfare work. Because who makes all the money? Right. So all the money comes from them. So that means that's why they are distributing the most of it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So everybody is involved. Okay, verses 5 to 19, Nandamar is saved from the serpent. Sukadeva Goswami continued, during the night a huge and extremely hungry snake appeared in that thicket. Slithering on his belly up to the sleeping Nanda Maharaj, the snake began swallowing him. In the clutches of the snake, Nanda Maharaj cried out, Krishna, Krishna, my dear boy, this huge serpent is swallowing me. Please save me, who am surrendered to you. When the cowherd men heard the cries of Nanda, they immediately rose up and saw that he was being swallowed. Distraught, they beat the serpent with blazing torches, but even though the firebrands were burning him, the serpent would not release Nanda Maharaj. Then the Supreme Lord, master of his devotees, came to the spot and touched the snake with his foot. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, Krishna arrived later since he was staying further away with his friends, avoiding the elders, since that was restricted to their play. These things are eternal. He came quickly out of affection for his father and faced him directly. He touched the snake's tail with his foot. But he did not injure the snake, since the snake would be released from its curse by another means. The snake was like Putana, dressing as a nurse. That was her bhakti, by which the Lord became merciful. By some sort of bhakti, though the snake could not be touched, Krishna touched it with his foot and received, and it received the greatest benefit. Right. So he wasn't, you know, like that. He just touched it, and by that it became purified and then took on its original form. Yes.
It says that the snake was like Putana dressed as a nurse. I mean, he wasn't dressed in anything, he was just a snake.
No, it means the principle that looks like one thing, but it appears as another.
Oh.
So it's Vididhara who's, as it looks like a snake. Yes, yes, yes. And so then, yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued, the snake had all his sinful reactions destroyed by the touch of the Supreme Lord's divine foot, and thus he gave up his serpent body and appeared in the form of a worshipable Vidyadhara, right? So, so in other words, she looked like a nurse, but by the touch of Krishna, then she took on her natural form, which was Putana. So here he looks like a snake, but when touched by Krishna, then he takes on his natural form of Vidyadhara. Yeah. Does that make sense? So it might be slightly reversed, that one looked nicer and it went worse, this one looks worse and it became nicer, but it's the principle of that by the touch of Krishna, then the original form comes out. Yeah. Okay. The snake had all his sinful reactions destroyed by the touch of the Supreme Lord's divine foot. And thus he gave up his serpent body and appeared in the form of worship of a worshipable Vidyadhara. The Supreme Lord Hrishikesha then questioned this personality, who was standing before him with his head bowed, his brilliantly effulgent body bedecked with golden necklaces. Lord Krishna said, my dear sir, you appear so wonderful, glowing with such great beauty. Who are you, and who forced you to assume this terrible body of a snake? Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Immediately upon being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna, the serpent shed its reptilian body and appeared in a very beautiful demigod named Vidyadhara. This means that the type of demigod he was he was is called. Okay. That the type of demigod he was is called Vidyadhara. His name, as will be revealed in the next set of verses, is Sudarshana. Right? So you can call by that category, right? Just like you can call someone by the office they hold, right? Or they can also then by the appropriate title or name. Right? So his name is Sudarshana, but he's Vidyadhara, just like Indra. Is that's a position, but I think his name in this time around is Purandara.
Yes, Purandara.
Yeah, like that. So like that, or Vyasadeva, and then Krishna Dvaipayana, like this. So that kind of principle. His bodily features were so beautiful that he appeared to be worshipable. There was a luster and effulgence emanating from his body, and he was garlanded with a golden necklace. He offered obeisances to Lord Krishna and stood before him with great humility. Krishna then asked the demigod, "You appear to be a very nice demigod and to be favored by the goddess of fortune," right? Because he's just so attractive. It means the others, you see, they have something, but he seems to be more attractive than your standard, you know, demigod, like that. So that quality is coming out here.
Then he had a golden necklace.
Sorry?
And then he had a golden necklace
also. A gold?
Golden necklace.
Golden necklace, yes. How is it that you performed such abominable activities that you got the body of a serpent? The demigod then began to narrate the story of his previous life. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, Krishna inquired from the Vidyadhara in order to show fear of disrespecting the Brahmanas to all the pilgrims from various villages who had gathered there. Krishna is addressed as the controller of all the senses, Rishikesha, to indicate that he made the assembled pilgrims listen attentively to the words of the Vidyadhara. Right? So he's asking the question so that everybody assembled there will get the benefit. So he's controlling their senses so that they hear this story. The serpent replied, "I am the well-known Vidyadhara named Sudarshana. I was very opulent and beautiful, and I used to wander freely in all directions in my airplane. Once I saw some homely sages of the lineage of Angira Muni. Proud of my beauty, I ridiculed them, and because of my sin, they made me assume this lowly form. It was actually for my benefit that those merciful sages cursed me, since now I have been touched by the foot of the supreme spiritual master of all the worlds and have thus been relieved of all inauspiciousness." Srila Jiva Goswami writes, "He is still called a snake, Sarpa Uvacha, because his present body was simply a transformation of the snake body." So, yeah. So then he's still called by that, because that's what he was, so we're going to know him by that form. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "One should note here that before being favored by Krishna, a person is always under the modes of material nature, however elevated he may be materially. Any materially elevated person can be condemned to an abominable species of life if he is not careful. It is a misconception that after the reaching the human form, one is never degraded. The Vidyadhara himself stated that even though he was a demigod, he was condemned to become a serpent. But because he was touched by the lotus feet of Krishna, he immediately came to Krishna consciousness. He admitted, however, that in his previous life, he was actually sinful." Right? Because how he behaved, went around, it was just out of his pride. Because when you're dealing with pride, that is sinful. Right? Nowadays, it's considered, no, it's part of the thing and all that. But it's actually sinful. So if in a sinful society, you may have that. Remember, like mentioned also some top musicians. I think this was he was the professor at the Mysore University. And so I'm not even sure that he was not known as Veena Vidvan or something. He was like really, really respected for his music. And they were talking about somebody who was also a good musician. And one of the persons mentioned that, he's a bit proud, and he has a bit of a, that air around him of superiority and all that. And the Vidvan, he mentioned, yes, these great personalities like that are so big, it's kind of like, it's natural for them to be like that. You know, that they're going to be in that way. And so, therefore, the music is so good, you just ignore that. You know, it's like prima donnas, the prima ballerinas. They're generally really annoying, but because they're so good, you just ignore the annoyance. Is that so? You know, so in other words, this aspect of being proud of your things and all that, then amongst the materialists, they'll see it as okay because that's the goal of life. But in actuality, it's actually sinful because you're not supposed to be proud because all these qualities are coming from the Lord. And so by the Lord's grace, one is getting them, so we see ourselves as servants of the Lord, so then we're not proud. Yes? No? Very good. In material existence, four things are very valuable. To be born in a decent family, to be very rich, to be very learned, and to be very beautiful. Right? So the Vedas describe this, but then you're going to have your standards of that, but then you also have, if you're not following the Vedas, then you make up your own standards in these. Because it's not like, what? Why would those be there? No, everybody accepts this. These are considered to be material assets. Unfortunately, without Krishna consciousness, these material assets sometimes become sources of sin and degradation. Despite Vidyadhara's being a demigod and having a beautiful body, he was condemned to the body of a snake due to pride. Therefore, from this incident, we can learn that those who are too proud of their material assets or who are inimical towards others are degraded to the bodies of snakes. A snake is considered to be the most cruel and envious living entity. But those who are human beings and are envious of others are considered to be even more vicious than snakes. Because snakes, you know, it's like if you're sitting over here and they're sitting way over there, they're not going to come over here and bite you. You get too close to them, you step on them like that, then they get easily offended, right? Like that. But here, humans who are envious of others are more vicious because they will come from over there over to here and give you trouble. So that's the difference. The snake can be charmed or controlled by mantras and herbs, but a person who is envious cannot be controlled by anyone. So that's just... Srila Sanatana Goswami writes, "The serpent said, 'Ah, what can be said of the power of saintly people? Because of that, my wicked act became the highest blessing. The sages were most merciful, because they did not become disturbed by my offense. They were interested in delivering fallen persons. It is understood that they said, in the future you will be born in Mathura area and will receive the highest auspiciousness by being touched by Krishna's lotus foot. Otherwise you could never attain such good fortune. Thus the curse was for giving mercy. I would be touched by the foot of the Lord of the universe, Loka, Guru Na, a person hard to obtain." Right? As a Vidyadhara, he'd never get this opportunity. But as a snake, by the arrangement of the sages, then he's gotten this opportunity. So in one lifetime, he's able to come to that position. But otherwise, it wouldn't have happened. So that's the point, is that it's not that punishment's not there, but we have to see the punishment, becomes resolved into further Krishna consciousness, further auspiciousness. But if it's not, then it's not actually punishment. Then it's just, you know, the problems that the snake's got. Right. The serpent continued, "My Lord, you destroy all fear for those who, fearing this material world, take shelter of you. By the touch of your feet, I am now freed from the curse of the sages. O destroyer of distress, please let me return to my planet. O master of mystic power, O great personality, O Lord of the devotees, I surrender to you. Please command me as you will. O supreme God, Lord of all lords of the universe." Srila Sanatana Goswami elaborates, "Wherever I reside will always desire surrender to you." I guess wherever I reside, I will always desire to surrender unto you. This is expressed in this verse, "I take shelter of you." Concerning his own surrender, he praises the Lord. The cause of surrender is stated by the various names of the Lord. The serpent requests, "Now give me permission to leave for my planet." To which Krishna suggests, "You should stay here and engaged in my service." The serpent replies, "O Krishna, Parabrahman in human form, I have no qualification to stay, as I am a devata with a differing form from yours. That planet is also yours, Lord of all planets. You also make us enjoy the results of our previous actions. What can I do? Being impelled by you, the giver of karmic results. O Lord, Ishwara, O Lord of all controllers of planets like Brahma, I, like Indra, am not qualified to stand in front of you."
And here we see that he feels, in one sense, he sees Krishna and he feels blessed, but at the same time, he feels prone to go back to be Vidyadhara.
No, but that's because he feels he's unqualified, because he's in a demigod body, so how would he take part in the Lord's pastimes? Like that. He feels as a demigod, it would kind of, I guess, he would stick out, you know, because they're going to be bigger and all that kind of stuff. Feet don't touch the ground, you know, like that. So in the games, it probably wouldn't work out so good. You know. Plus, there's, you know, they're devotees, but you know, so that aspect is there, and then they just, that's humility. So. The serpent continued, "O infallible one, I was immediately freed from the Brahman's punishment simply by seeing you. Anyone who chants your name purifies all who hear his chanting, as well as himself. How much more beneficial then is the touch of your lotus feet?" Srila Jiva Goswami writes, "Now I have particularly realized your greatness. Just by seeing you, my identity with the snake body disappeared. But by the touch of your foot, the snake form turned into that of the Vidyadhara. Touched directly by your foot, that's why I said, just by seeing you, I became purified. But then when he was touched by his lotus feet, then he came back to his previous position. Touched directly by your foot, I will make others on my planet successful by that touch. What to speak of myself," right? So then he'll preach. "Simply by uttering your name even once, without any faith, since the verb is in the present tense, grinam, without fully chanting, it purifies all people immediately. There is no qualification, right? It purifies all, and there is no consideration of time, since it acts immediately, and even just hearing the name has this effect." Right? So that's the glory of the chanting the holy names. So even you're not qualified, hearers are not qualified, but if you've heard from bona fide source, then the effect is there. Everyone's purified. Right? We may complain, no, this means the pure holy name. No, it doesn't. It absolutely does not. We should not make that mistake. It means Nama Bas. Right? Because Nama Bas will purify all the sins of the universe. Right? Because but pure Shuddha Nama, or the pure name, that will give you prema. So the only reason we would consider that, how can, you know, the name, you're not on that pure platform, how could that have that effect of purifying all sins? Because we think sins are very great. It's, you know, the pile of sins is so huge that bhakti can't overcome it. And we have a value in liberation, that it's actually an important thing. And so, therefore, we may consider like this, right? But in actuality, removing all sins, that's not a big deal. So, therefore, one name can do that. Even if not fully chanted, without fully being done, without the full mentality, it still works. That's the purpose of the holy name. So, if that's understood, then if we wanted to upgrade the city, we'd be out on Harinam every day. Right? Because that itself, just by that, then they're advancing so much. And then from that, then by having further contact, then they can actually be elevated to the devotional platform. So we see just the holy name will purify, and then that contact with the devotees will bring them to that devotional platform. So we see that's the Sankirtan movement. Yes. With offenses, but you have any alternative?
Well, I'm asking, like, what is the
It says here there's no consideration, there's no qualification, it purifies all, there's no consideration of time, it acts immediately. So therefore it's going to act anyway. So offensive may act a little less than namabhas, but the point is it's going to act.
So it's still purifying.
It's purifying for everybody. If it wasn't, then what's our chance? Right? So the point is, if it can take us from being whatever we were up to being serious about Krishna consciousness, that means unless we were started chanting with Shuddha Nam, which may not be a standard like that, then there may be offenses and all that. So therefore we move forward. Because the only cure is the holy name. That's the point, is that the holy name will act in all, but in offensive it'll be slower. In namabhas then it's very quick, and in shuddhanam then, you know, even more quick. Semitone. Because there isn't something else. That's why the example is given that when you have jaundice and you take sugar candy, there's no other, it tastes bitter, but there's nothing else to cure it. Does that make sense? Yeah, those who don't take sugar better have really good livers, because sugar is actually medicine for the liver. Believe it or not. Funny. If it's sugar, then it's good for the liver. If it's just alcohol, it's bad for the liver. But both are sugar. Yes?
So in the kirtan, the devotees should ignore the pride, like in the example you gave about the musicians?
Yeah, but if you could have someone else singing, then you could have them singing also. It means you wouldn't prefer, in other words, if you can do it locally, why do you need to invite them? And if they show up, then, you know, they all can also sing. Why not? Because if they're taking part, others are singing, they're listening, so they're getting purified, they're singing, that like that. You know, or if you feel it's just really not so nice and all that, then that's why the traditional ritual of powdering one's nose has been given by the Lord, so that you can step out in situations that are, unfavorable. Does that make sense? Yes.
So what's the meaning of the last offense against the holy man about how you can...
Maintaining material attachments. Because you're maintaining them. It doesn't mean that you... It doesn't say that if you have them, that's an offense. It's maintaining them. Like that, or just so you have an attachment that's there and you're not willing to give it up. It doesn't mean you can give it up. You have to be willing to give it up. Though you may not be giving it up, but you're willing to. Right? It means you'd like to. No, it's not even that. That's where you have to be careful. It's that you're willing to, like that, but, you know, but it's... yes. Does that make sense? So it's maintaining them. That's why we always speak strongly on the point of when we use our bodily identification as reasons why not to follow the Vedic cultural recommendations, that's maintaining material attachments. That we have these and therefore we find a difficulty, that's fine. But then if we make up a philosophy to validate our attachments and say that they're perfectly good, in fact, they're as good, if not even better, than all these spiritual recommendations, that's then at the point of where you won't become purified. You know, in fact, they'll just get worse. Like that. Yes?
There's a still big confusion among the devotees that what kind of name we chant. Is it offensive chanting or the
namabhas
chanting?
Well, but that's only two. There's three options. So you're saying that the people who are chanting Shuddha Nam, then they're worried that they're not up to the standard, and so out of humility they're thinking that they're chanting, you know, namabhas, but actually they're just being downright offensive.
No, they don't take part in that kind of stuff.
Oh.
Okay. They just chant, you know,
They just chant and are feeling that they're unqualified.
So then
so now in here they're trying to elevate themselves that I'm not chanting you know, offensively, I'm chanting in Nama Bas, or what's this conversation?
For different reasons. Some people put more accent on Nama Parad, that yes, we want to come up, but still, after 20 years of chanting, we're still on the Nama Parad level. And others somehow rather quickly come to the Nama Bas level, and there's a big,
but what happened to there is no qualification that purifies all, and there is no consideration of time since it acts immediately. Just hearing the name has this effect. That's the point of Nam Nam Akadi Bahuvanija Sarva Shakti. That it works even if we're not qualified. So what does it matter? We know that there's the 10 offenses. We try to avoid them. We understand what's pure devotional service. We try to practice, you know, in that line, in that mentality. So if that's what's going on, what does it matter where we are? To say, no, we're all this or we're all that, what's the importance?
The importance is that we want to come to the next level, so we have to understand where we are at now.
So the point is, but how do you move up? Stopping offenses.
Yeah.
Right? And focusing on Krishna. So those two you focus on. It's not that position needs to be overly emphasized. It needs to be that whatever our position, then being absorbed in Krishna, right, and doing things favorably to please Krishna, that's the perfection, because that's what you see that the gopis are doing. But when they became proud, then it's not doing that. But when they are, then it is. So you can put an emphasis on there. It's like we said before, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that in following the rules and in the aspect of serving the Lord in dutiful activity, you know, that position, rather than natural attraction, then one's going to, there's two groups. One focuses on what should be done and how to do that, and the other focuses on how to avoid what's bad, you know. So this is just a case of that. They're focusing on. So it's not actually, they may see it as two different, but it's not. It's just a matter of whatever works for you. But it's the point is I'm avoiding why. I'm not trying to break the rule. Why am I not trying to break the rule? Because it pleases Krishna. Right? It's to serve Krishna. So then the focus is on how to perform that rule properly. You know, I'm avoiding doing, avoiding breaking the rule, but we also have to understand is that it's not just not breaking the rule is enough. It should be being done favorably for Krishna. So one has to take it forward. Like all those, mentioned before, all those assets that one may have, good birth, education, wealth, and beauty, that then those things should be seen in connection to the Lord, then they become perfect. And if not, then they're always going to create trouble.
Sometimes when somebody, the question of when people with attitude, they leave the kirtan or they cook, whatever activity they do. And if we see and become affected, not that we lose our Krishna consciousness, but we just affected by that. It means that our own impurities are there. Instead of seeing the pure name, we see the attitude of the person.
Yes.
Should we still avoid that?
If it works for you, yes. That's why I said. That's yes. Why nose powdering is a long-standing tradition. You know, you left the gas on, or have to take your kid to the dentist, and oh no, it's Thursday morning at 8:45, I forgot about the dentist. Okay. Even though the dentist is only there on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but you know. Yes, means if it's something there, but that's how we know also is the that aspect. But if we're hearing from those who are, it's more proper, that's better. But we're saying anybody will get benefit. But you could get more benefit by those who don't have that attitude. In other words, if these people went down the street and did Hari Nam, everyone would get benefit. But if there's a choice between hearing them and hearing someone else who doesn't have that false ego, then better to hear from them.
So. Yeah, because there's always discussions that we should hear despite, because it's the name that we're hearing, not the person.
That's there, but at the same time, it means if we're in that situation and that's there, then that's what you're doing. You just focus on the name and then that'll improve the situation. But at the same time, as if one is organizing these things, then you could also try to see how to, you know, avoid. You know, but at the same time, as there's the thing is that they like to chant, so then therefore, then you engage in the Krishna service. So by chanting, they'll get purified. So you just have to balance all that.
Yeah, because sometimes you see the benefit of one particular person, and sometimes you see the benefit of many other devotees.
Yeah. So as if you have an alternative, then you can always choose. But if you don't, then and they're willing to lead the kirtan and others aren't, then they leave. You know, because the others can get absorbed in all that. But that means then you have to be preaching about the importance of the name, pure chanting and all that. So then those who are listening then will try that mood and then take it up rather than go out and get themselves some earrings and a tattoo. Right? You know. So it's just a matter of what you're going to pick up. Does that make sense? Because the pure thing is what you want, the pure attitude. Because otherwise, these other things, we've already done these things. We've already done all the material. So now that that's been done, now we take up Krishna consciousness and we gauge our position in Krishna service. Right? So in other words, if we already have earrings and a tattoo, we don't need to get one. We already have them. So now we just engage in Krishna service. And if you don't have, you don't need them, so you don't need to get. Does that make sense?
And association.
And association.
Yeah, because this is the time one has to be more selective.
Yes, but that's who you're close with. That's who you spend that closer time with. With them, then you're more careful. But in general, then you are a little less. But as it is, there's always you can always go somewhere else if it's just too annoying. You know? Okay, so he's saying that I've been being touched by Krishna's lotus feet. Then he's now come to the devotional platform. So in the same way, going to his planet. Now he'll preach and make other people there, devotees. That's his position he's taken. And that's even more, booyah. He's been purified, right? So now... So then he's been purified, now he will purify again. Booyah means again.
We saw with Indra, he was humble, he was purified, he went back and committed another offense.
But so we haven't seen that yet, it's coming up later.
I'm not talking about Vidyadhara.
No, but I'm saying we haven't got to that pastime yet.
Yeah. But with us, we become fired up, purified. We go back to preach because we want to go back to whatever is natural, to what we are accustomed to. Because he's a Vidyadhara, he's not a snake. And he's also not an eternal associate of Krishna. That's why he cannot stay in Vrindavan, so he wants to go back to his original thing that he's used to. And there he will preach.
That's so?
That's the question.
I see, okay. So you're going to take that angle, is it?
Yeah.
So, in other words, you're going to go back and preach about, how you say, how the material world being a place of misery, then even though you're trying to enjoy yourself, and that eating your, how you say, falafel, then all the various sauces all get stuck in your beard. And so therefore then the material world is a very difficult. Yeah, one can do that. But the point is that that doesn't mean that we're not making the place where we are like Vrindavan. You know what I'm saying? It's not that, oh, we're here and go back. Hey, you know, how far back do you take it? Because you say, oh, there's this, but where does this lifetime is based on the previous life? So then, you know, are we going to go out in the backyard and be a garden slug or something? You know, because one life, well, we were out there. You know, so. So it's just a matter of what situation is favorable for us at the time to be involved. So it's like if we're here, we can stay here in Mayapur, do things like that. We take advantage of that. But if someone can't like that, then he goes back to a situation in which he is comfortable to be engaged in Krishna service. That's the idea. The idea is always be engaged. So whether it's going to be here, whether it's going to be, you know, somewhere else, or whether it's going to be according to what you're comfortable with, then like that. Sukadev Goswami continued, thus receiving the permission of Lord Krishna, the demigod Sudarshana circumambulated him, bowed down to offer him homage, and then returned to his heavenly planet. Nanda Maharaj was thus delivered from peril. Srila Sanatana Goswami elaborates, thus receiving permission, since silence is approval, maunam samatim lakshanam, he departed. His consent was naturally given, since the Lord had appeared in the Yadu dynasty to benefit the whole world. Dasarham. Right, so he's explaining all this, and Krishna is just silent, you know, but paying attention. So it's not that he's silent because, you know, he's busy, you know, doing, say, taking care of some texting that's important thing has come up, something like that. And so then he's paying attention but not saying anything. So then you take it that is, then that's the Vedic thing, is that is then considered approval. So then from that, then Gandharva knows, I mean, the Vididhara knows he should go now. In the Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, this pastime represents how Krishna saves the truth of devotional service from being swallowed by the Mayavadis and other atheists. It illustrates how devotees must avoid the company of such snake-like people. So we see is that many will take the devotional process because it's popular and then use it for their own purpose. As believe it or not, Mayavadis means actual, you know, how you say, flag-waving, card-carrying, you know, Indian, you know, older, long beard, robes, you know, Mayavadis, like that. They actually, to the common people, preach bhakti. Like that. They don't talk about the impersonal thing like that because in their minds it's too elevated for them. They won't understand it. This is just for them as sannyasis. So as grihasthas, they should just follow bhakti. And when one gets purified by being religious and being pious, then one will come to the platform, you can take sannyas, and then you can actually be a bona fide Mayavadi. But the problem is then that's why, because we're thinking, why would they be talking about, you know, the pastimes of the Lord or that? Because that's what the common people like, right? Because they're interested in followers, Dhanam, Janam, and Sundari. So therefore, then they do that. Because if they talk the pastimes of the Lord and discuss bhakti, people will like them, they'll have many followers. But by hearing from them, then it's like milk touched by the lips of a serpent, right? So that's what you have to judge. So if it's just a little bit of false ego, you don't worry about it, you know. But if it's like really, really nasty, then you, that's why God made doors. And you go through doors and they close, you generally hear less sound. Right? So then to keep devotional service from disappearing into that, so we see like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, then they come and they re-establish the proper understanding. So then people hearing from the proper parampara, then they hear about devotional service and the pastime of the Lord, their heart becomes purified. But when you hear from these others, even though they're talking about devotional service, then one becomes contaminated. Like that. Sukadeva Goswami continued, the inhabitants of Braja were astonished to see the mighty power of Sri Krishna. Dear King, they were completed their worship of Lord Shiva and returned to Braja, along the way respectfully describing Krishna's powerful acts. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. While returning, they recalled the wonderful activities of Krishna. By relating the incident of the Vidyadhara's deliverance, they became more attached to Krishna. They had come to worship Lord Shiva and Ambika, but the result was that they became more and more attached to Krishna, right? Because they're devotees, so they're going to be praying for that, seeing them in relationship to Krishna, so naturally their attraction to Krishna is increased, and so that's what we see happen. Similarly, the gopis worshipped goddess Katyayani to become more and more attached to Krishna. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that persons who are attached to worshipping demigods like Lord Brahma, Shiva, Indra, and Chandra are, for some personal benefit, are less intelligent and have forgotten the real purpose of life. But the cowherd men, inhabitants of Vrindavan, were no ordinary men. Whatever they did for Krishna. If one worships demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma to become more attached to Krishna, that is approved. But if one goes to the demigods for some personal benefit, that is condemned. So seeing them from the position of devotees, then that's fine. But as we see, it's not a standard thing to be worshipping the demigods. Occasionally it comes up, there's something, you see something, something reminds you, then you may pray to them that you also, you know, come to the position of being absorbed in Krishna. Then that's fine. But it wouldn't be a regular thing that what you're doing. That makes sense. You know, unless, you know, downstairs from your house in the ground floor, as you come out the gate or to go into the gate, you have to go by the, you know, the Shiva, Hanuman, or Durga, or Ganesh temple every day. Then as you go in, you offer your respects and pray for developed Krishna. But if that's not the case, you probably wouldn't be doing it on a regular basis. Right. Yeah? Okay, so no one has, either no one has or you do have and know what I'm talking about. Okay. The pastime of Shankachuda. Sukadeva Goswami continued, once Lord Govinda and Lord Rama, the performers of wonderful feats, were playing in the forest at night with the young girls of Braja. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, Govinda is the prince of Gokul, and Rama is one who enjoys pastimes. At this time, their friendly relationship as equals became manifest since from birth. They had played together and a tinge of their Balya sentiments remained. This portion of their friendship is prominent in Braja. In Mathura and Dwarka, Balaram shows friendship as an elder brother. Thus his name is mentioned after Krishna's to indicate that in this pastime, Balaram played a secondary role and acted as a friend. Right? Because otherwise, generally, they mention Balaram's name first. Because once you get into Dwarka and all that, then he's the elder brother, and so then he takes that lead role. But then but it's always about Krishna. But in Braj, then you'll see they have that kind of more of equals, of being brothers and that, and so then it's less of that senior aspect. Though, of course, it's there, but it's more just on that pleasantness, that friendship aspect. Yes?
It sounds at this point as if they have a combined lila.
Yes, but here it seems to be. But the point is, it doesn't necessarily mean they're out there together. So whether they're all dancing together or whether they're separately dancing but close by, but it doesn't, so far hasn't mentioned the difference. I mean the specifics. But the point being is that Balaram has his own gopis, so he'll only dance with his gopis. So he has a conjugal relationship with his gopis, and his gopis are friends with Krishna. And Krishna's gopis have a conjugal relationship with him and a friendship relationship with Balaram. So they're not going to get mixed up. That's not happening. Okay. So, Andy?
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Priyananda.